This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And 13 years after 9/11, some of you out there have had it with war.
This is Alexander Monroe from Jefferson Township, New Jersey. I don't think that the U.S. should be heavily involved in the war against ISIS. We've done enough in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's time that NATO and the U.N. in general takes a larger role against the war against terror. I think we should be limited to airstrikes only.
But last night, almost as though 13 years hadn't passed since the attacks of 9/11, President Obama spoke about how the U.S. needs to return once again to a wartime footing to deal with the threat of terror.
At this moment, the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa, where radical groups exploit grievances for their own gain. And one of those groups is ISIL, which calls itself the Islamic State.
In an address to the nation from the state floor of the White House, President Obama outlined his strategy for confronting that Islamic State. We've been asking you how ready you are to go back to warfare in the Middle East.
This is Staff Sergeant John Bungren with the North Carolina Army National Guard. Those individuals, they've been at war for well over a millennia. I don't think our further interference is really going to change much. You know, I think the outline where, you know, we assist as we can with airstrikes is good to support them, because if anything is going to resolve itself over there, it's going to be internally. They need to step up and come together.
Sergeant Bongruner reached out to us at 877-8-MY-TAKE, and we encourage you to join this conversation. In his speech last night, the president emphasized that the U.S. will rely on a broad coalition of partners, as well as what he called a reformed Iraqi government, and using military lessons from anti-terror efforts in Yemen and Somalia, which we will talk about in detail in just a moment. But the president also said this is a U.S. fight as well.
I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
Question: how is this approach to the Islamic State in the Levant, ISIL, as the president calls them, how is it different from the war on terror, which we were told began after 9/11, 13 years ago? Joining me now from the Capitol is Linda Robinson, senior international policy analyst at RAND and author of 100 Victories, Special Ops and the Future of American Warfare. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Happy to be with you.
Give me your impression of what we heard from the president. Is this a pulling some old tools off the shelf in Yemen and Somalia and creating an initiative to confront ISIS? Or is this a fundamentally new military doctrine as you see it?
Well, I think there's elements of Yemen and Somalia, but there's, I think, a much heavier reliance on a broader array of partners. But the magnitude of the threat is, it's just a different order of magnitude with what is exists now and has been growing in Iraq and Syria, the Islamic State organization. It's holding New England-sized territory, has, you know, above 10,000 members. So it's a much larger and more virulent and well-equipped and well-funded force than Yemen ever was or Somalia ever was. Now, they have kept the pressure on in Yemen and Somalia, integrated those threats. But when the president said, you know, he intends to ultimately destroy this group, the Islamic State, that is taking on a very large threat with a pretty significant commitment.
Do you have to invade a territory the size of Maryland to roll that back? Or, you know, these folks are out in the open there in Iraq and Syria. They're not hiding in the desert like Al-Qaeda was doing in Yemen and, you know, Osama bin Laden was doing in Pakistan. I'm just wondering if the Yemen example is even relevant at all here.
Yes, that's why I would prefer to talk about the facts and the situation on the ground. In terms of the differences, I would like to point out there's a big swath of desert terrain, as you say, up there in this, what I call the New England-sized territory that the Islamic State is now holding. But they also hold cities, Raqqa in Syria, and very importantly, Mosul and Fallujah. And of course, they're holding things like oil refineries. They've threatened a couple of dams. So they're in possession of major assets of that country. What it will take to get in there and roll them back, that is, to me, I have no quarrel with the comprehensive approach that the president laid out. The devil, as always, is in the details, the doability of this. Airstrikes certainly can, and I think already have, to some degree, blunted the momentum. But if the objective is actually to destroy this group, it comes down to how capable are these various partners that he intends to rely upon, because we saw the Iraqi security forces literally crumbling over these past months as the Islamic State got on a roll and began taking over all this territory. I have focused a fair amount on the Iraqi Special Operations Forces through the last decade or so, and our U.S. Special Operations Forces really created, stood up that group, trained them, built them a big training base called Area 4. They had closely mentored and partnered with that group until we left at the end of 2011. So I would say they're probably the most capable partner in terms of actual Iraqi government forces. But you also have Shia militias, very problematic, but also very numerous. They've been very active. You have the Sunnis. They would not have gone out and fought without support from the U.S., and that's one of the misreadings of history, that these Sunni tribes and Sunnis flipped themselves and decided to do this all on their own. So that's the question now, because they don't necessarily trust this new government in Iraq. Finally, there's the Peshmerga, the Kurdish militia. They're probably the most capable and unproblematic partner in this terrain of proxies we're looking at supporting, but they did take over the city of Kirkuk, which was not something the U.S. Government supports. They have their own agenda, but from a military perspective, they're probably the strongest read right now for the U.S. to lean on until they see whatever other of these groups are actually capable and willing.
Would you say there's an uneasy buy-in by the Pentagon here in the sense that it sounds like special operations are going to be taking the lead here, or some slice of the Air Force is going to be taking the lead? I don't get a sense that this is necessarily something that the Pentagon wants to do, but maybe it is a big step on the part of this evolution of special operations that you've written so much about.
Yes, well, I think this is the so-called new way of war that I was writing about. Special operations forces, when you're addressing these kinds of non-state threats or irregular threats, they have a much bigger role. But I'd like to say the special operations forces are quick to say they always need the help of conventional forces, and that can range from support, logistics support, of course the Air Force support, it can be intelligence support, and in the case of training and equipping these various elements, the Iraqi ones I just outlined, but also the Syrian moderate opposition. And so the magnitude of this effort will inevitably include conventional forces. But I think you are right, a lead role, and already in the assessments and the people out there on the ground in Iraq, it has been a soft, heavy force, and they will play a major role.
But, you know, apparently the president authorized raids inside of this territory to free Sotloff and Foley, the hostages, and they were unsuccessful. So I'm just wondering what the track record is at this point.
Yes, and I'm glad you raised that, because it absolutely makes my point that people shouldn't look, just like airstrikes aren't a panacea or a silver bullet. Special operations aren't a silver bullet either, and especially when you've got a problem of this magnitude, it's going to take this multi-front approach. And I think that you raise the question of the Pentagon's willingness. I mean, you know, people in uniform, and their job is to execute the policies and goals that the president lays out. And there has been, I've been hearing, you know, for a year, many individuals in uniform have been concerned about this growing threat and understand the threat it poses to U.S. interests, not just U.S. citizens, but how our interests are bound up in the region, the creation of a large sanctuary that is now quite large and has abilities, by holding that territory and having all of that armament and finances, they really are the strongest terrorist group we have ever seen. So there is a wide recognition of this problem. The question is, how much is it going to take? What is the will and capability of these various partners? Of course, the other element that I think is important is, while we do have a new Iraqi government, we have to see how willing they are to leave behind the sectarian ways and really embrace the Sunnis and mend their fences with the Kurds. That is a critical political part of the strategy. And frankly, the new government is formed, but it doesn't have a defense minister, it doesn't have a security minister. And when I saw the initial proposed occupant of the interior ministry, Hadi al-Amiri, the head of the Badr Corps, a major Shia militia, that is not a name that is going to attract Sunni support to this government. Now, he was ultimately turned aside as the pick, but it is critical that this government be formed in a very ecumenical way.
Well, quickly, reading between the lines, it sounds like you're saying we are late to the game in the U.S., and the Iraqi forces probably aren't ready.
Yes, we really have to find the capable Iraqi units and build them up. We have to have the right signals from the Iraqi government that they understand this is an existential threat, and they must reach out to all Iraqis if they're going to tackle it. And I think we have a real problem with the Syrian opposition because they're so weak. They've been nearly decimated. They've lost most of their territory. They're hanging on by a thread in Aleppo. So we really have a big job ahead to fulfill what the president has laid out.
Linda Robinson is senior international policy analyst at the RAND Corporation and author of 100 Victories, Special Ops, and the Future of American Warfare. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Did you hear the president last night? President Obama says this is still our fight, this war on terror in Iraq and Syria. The president authorized the sending of more than 400 military personnel back to the region. Equipment will be going there as well. Does the threat of ISIS warrant a new round of fighting 13 years after the attacks on 9/11? What are you feeling? Some of our listeners support the president and the steps he outlined last night.
My name is James from San Antonio, Texas. I'm a veteran myself, but I understand from all the combat zones that I've been to that the only time we ever actually use military force is when all their options have ever been exhausted. If the president and the government say that we should and we need to go back to Iraq, we should, and we need to go back to Iraq. That's what being in the military is about. We make the sacrifices that most people don't think about.
Well, what about the rest of you? Most of you, at least who called us at 877-8-MY-TAKE, do not support the president.
This is Chris. I'm calling you from Delray Beach, Florida. I feel that there's no need for any invasion and any military force from any country. I think they should bring all the troops home so we can protect ourselves here.
Is the war on terror an open-ended conflict that will go on many, many years after 9/11? It's already gone on for 13 years. The president has reauthorized some sort of military intervention to deal with ISIS, the Islamic State in the Middle East. What do you think? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Be a part of the conversation. You can also find us at facebook.com/thetakeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.